Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Had a gentleman call in from Eureka on the program yesterday. I think he's on X at Free Northman. There in the northern part of Montana, just south of the Canadian border. And he said that President Trump's speech at the UN General Assembly yesterday was epic. And epic it was. We've got more highlights from President Trump's remarks to the UN yesterday. We played a couple of those sound bites live on the show shortly after he made the remarks, as we were getting, you know, real-time news and information from X as we were live on the radio Tuesday morning. But we've got more highlights we'll get to here later in the hour. Plus, Kamala Harris, have you heard about her little book tour that she is on right now? Apparently, her approval rating has dropped 13 points since she has jumped back on TV. She was on The View. She was on a few other TV programs, but if you saw one of the interviews, you saw them all, because as Jesse Waters pointed out last night, she is just doing these robotic interviews where she has memorized the same statements, and she just repeats the same robotic statements on every single TV interview that she does, refuses to answer questions, instead just replies with these canned sound bites as usual. So anyway, Kamala's book tour also earning her not too many friends in the Democrat Party either, as she now is throwing more folks under the bus, like Tampon Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, and more. We'll get to those topics and much more coming up in the second half of Montana Talks here this morning. We're going to have the phone lines open for the second half of this show. Or if you want to jump in on the conversation with our guest here in the first half of the program, you can do that as well. Nick Smith had a guest opinion column in the Lee newspapers, or at least I spotted it in the Billings Gazette here recently. This is the headline: rescinding the roadless rule is a necessary step for forest health and public safety. Nick Smith is executive director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities. He also serves as public affairs director for the American Forest Resource Council, a trade association representing the forest sector in Montana and five other western states. He'll be our guest here this morning on the show. And of course, you can jump in on the conversation. You can send us a message on the Montana Talks app, or after we get the conversation up and rolling for a few minutes, give us a ring, 406-294-0970. And then in the second half of the show, we'll get back into the news of the day, taking your phone calls and more. Plus, the other one, we got to play this soundbite. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins, talking about American farmland and the communist Chinese. Remind me if I don't get to it. We got to get to that one in the second half of the show here this morning. But first up, we're going to talk about the great move by the Trump administration to rescind the roadless rule.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Well, let's just jump right into it here with Nick Smith. Great guest opinion column that caught my eye in the Billings Gazette a few days ago. Nick, thanks for being with us. You were kind of getting me up to speed where we're at when it comes to rescinding the roadless rule. Let's start there. I understand the public comment period has now expired. So what's the timeline looking like on when we could finally do away with this absurd roadless rule that we've been stuck with now for over, two decades?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me on the program. I appreciate it. As you mentioned, the Forest Service has proposed rescinding the Clinton-era roadless rule and just completed a public comment process that ended on the 19th. So the agency at this point is going to take those comments, analyze them, do some additional work, and we would expect some kind of decision probably in the early spring.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, isn't it? It's like how much harm can be done to this country so quickly, but yet then how long it takes to right the ship or to turn things around or to fix the harm that was caused.
Federal policy really defies common sense. I mean, it really does, especially when you talk about the roadless rule. I mean, this was a policy that was put in place in the dying hours of Bill Clinton's presidency, and it basically, you know, set aside 59 million acres, you know, without a vote or input Congress, without a public commenting process. And you know, I think, you know, we need to kind of look at this policy, you know, nearly 25 years later and decide, is it, you know, what is exactly is it protecting, and is it the right policy to have in place when our forests are burning?
Yeah, I was on Capitol Hill when all this was going down, and I remember hearing from the Fergus County commissioners in Lewistown and hearing from the timber communities. And yeah, you had, you know, former Democrat President Bill Clinton just in the final days in office, just with a stroke of a pen, making decisions like this, declaring national monument designations that defied what the locals on the ground actually wanted to see take place. And we've seen the demise of our timber industry. We've lost so many mills since that point. But it's not even just about the timber industry, which is a very important topic in itself. This is also about access to our so-called public lands. This has stripped away access for disabled hunters and other folks who want to get out there and enjoy our outdoor economy.
You're absolutely right. You know, this is a lot more than about timber. I think your listeners would be interested to know that there are 6.4 million acres of roadless areas in Montana. That's larger than the size of the state of Massachusetts. So we're talking about a lot of land. And, you know, once again, it's a policy that was, you know, unilaterally put in place by the president in his last hours. And, you know, where we're coming from is that the roadless rule really reflects a do-nothing approach to our federal lands, the belief that forests are best protected by locking them up, but that really hasn't worked.
Talk about specifically right here in Montana from a timber industry standpoint, what this roadless rule actually did that was basically done by the stroke of a pen.
Well, the issue with the roadless rule is that it is a sort of a top-down blanket rule that prohibited public land managers from considering sort of roaded access in these particular areas. Once again, this is 6.4 million acres of roadless area in Montana, you know, a huge amount of land. Rescinding the rule does not mandate any new road building or logging, but what it does is it gives these public land managers, you know, the ability to consider and implement forest health treatments like thinning, where it makes sense and where it fits within their forest plans. And so, you know, removing this sort of top down sort of blanket rule that says you can't do anything, you can't put in any access, I think, you know, gives the additional flexibility to our public land managers to do those treatments, especially where roadless areas intersect with, you know, communities, the wildland-urban interface.
Well, and look, as you pointed out in your guest opinion column, it's been 25 years. This is no longer hypothetical. We know the damage that this roadless rule caused.
Absolutely. And you have to look at the broader context of federal land management in Montana. You know, more than half of all national forest system lands are reserved from routine active management, you know, whether it's timber harvest, thinning, activities that help, you know, remove that fuel and, you know, keep these forests healthy and resilient. And, you know, from a timber industry perspective, you have to understand that, you know, there's a small group of serial litigants that will sue and tie up any effort by the Forest Service to manage these forests. You know, right now, nearly 300 to 370 million board feet of timber is currently tied up on Montana's national forest. And so, you know, when you have so much land that is locked up, that is tied up in litigation, it doesn't just provide uncertainty for our industry. It makes things uncertain for our public land managers and certainly for our communities that want forests to be managed to reduce the risk of severe wildfire.
Yeah, and you mentioned what, nearly 300 to 370 million board feet of timber currently tied up to litigation just in Montana alone. We'll put that in perspective with some Montana-specific numbers next. Stand by.
Did you
back
know
after
that
this.
Montana's elect-
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, as Nick Smith wrote in this column here, nearly 300 to 370 million board feet of timber are currently tied up in litigation on Montana's national forests. That's enough wood to build up to 23,000 homes. Do we have a problem with housing costs in Montana right now? Obviously, that's a rhetorical question. But, yeah, lots to talk about here this morning. Plus, we're taking your phone calls as well. If you want to jump in on the conversation here with Nick Smith, Executive Director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities. He is also with the American Forest Resource Council as well. In fact, let's start with one of your phone calls. We've got Chris in Columbia Falls on the phone lines. Chris, I know this is a topic you've been fired up about for quite some time, like me.
Yeah. Hey, guys. I was just curious on what the odds were that environmental groups, if this is rescinded, what the odds were if environmental groups would just be able to sue, get everything into litigation, and then stop any forward progress with all this, sort of like they do with so many of our timber sales.
Yeah, great point. The easiest answer to that is does a bear Adam Schiff in the woods, right? Because as sure as that happens, as sure as you can bet, the environmentalists will file a lawsuit. Great question, Chris. Thanks for the call. Nick Smith, your thoughts? I mean, on the litigation front, I'm so happy that we now have two federal judge seats that President Trump gets to make an appointment for here in Montana, because that is absolutely critical on any of these types of conversations.
Absolutely. And yes, a great question by the caller. You know, as I said, you know, a few moments ago, you know, these small, you know, these handful of groups, they will litigate anything that they can. And, you know, the Robles rule rescission is probably one of those that they're eyeing. I mean, I guess I would add that the Forest Service is kind of being deliberate in this process in terms of, you know, doing the public commenting period, doing all of the environmental paperwork that's, you know, associated with any federal land management action. And so, you know, I think if the Forest Service sort of sees through this process, I think that's one of the reasons why it's probably not going to be until spring when we see a decision, because, you know, nothing fast happens in federal land management. But, you know, I'm confident that, you know, they follow through with the process, that, you know, it will be, the Forest Service will have a strong case for keeping that rescission and not being litigated back to, you know, 60 million acres of roadless area.
I wonder now, too, with the Chevron decision being overturned and reining in federal government overreach, I wonder if that could help play a role here. But also fundamentally, you know, really these far-left liberal judges have been the blank check for these radical environmental groups on every front. So that's why I'm so pleased to see that, you know, President Trump has already nominated Representative Bill Mercer, a Republican out of Billings, former U.S. attorney, to fill one of those judge seats. I think he would fill the one out of Missoula. And then he's got another opening in Billings now, too. So that's going to be key. What other things are you seeing out there in terms of reining in, you know, these environmental groups basically suing and then pocketing our taxpayer dollars as a result?
Yeah, Yeah, so, you know, Congress, the, you know, Montana's congressional delegation, you know, the Trump administration are looking at a number of ways to reduce this anti-forestry litigation that is really tying up responsible active forest management in Montana. You know, one of those things is looking at reforms to the Equal Access to Justice Act, which, you know, the law itself is a, that, you know, I think has great goals in terms of enabling individuals to sue the federal government when they've got a strong case. But there are, you know, certainly plenty of examples where environmental groups have used this law to sue the Forest Service to stop a forest management project because they didn't dot their I's or cross their T's in their NEPA environmental paperwork. They convince a judge to stop the project, and then they reap, you know, big attorney's awards for their organization. You know, there are efforts to look at ways that to see how we can streamline NEPA so that we are following, you know, the environmental review process to make sure that, you know, federal land management actions are good for the environment without sort of enabling this anti-forestry litigation. There, you know, Washington, D.C. is looking at reforms to the Endangered Species Act. And so I think, you know, whether it's timber or other uses of federal lands, there are efforts underway to bring some common sense back into management of these lands.
Yeah. And then, of course, with just better judges on the bench, frankly, that will defund right. a lot of these radical environmental groups because they go to these liberal judges and then they collect the check afterwards. And we're seeing that even with our state courts here with some of these liberal judges at the state level. All right, let's sneak on another caller. We've got, is it Tim in Poppy's Pillar? Tim, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Tim, it's Tom. But anyway, you guys are spot on about this litigation stuff because, oh, and maybe this is just a piggyback on what Chris was talking about and you guys talking about, but nobody is going to pour an inch of a square foot of concrete for infrastructure for a mill in Montana and hire loggers until there's a guaranteed annual cut. Well, that's going to take the ilks of Michael Garrity, the Alliance for the Northern Rockies, to be shut down on this, especially harvest and beetle kill. You know, if he screams, well, there's a wolf in there, that's wolf habitat, bam. Lynx, that's lynx habitat, bam.
Nobody's going right?
to... Right. So that has got to be dealt with. So maybe... But this is hopeful. I just want to say it's hopeful for the timber industry because if these new judges can do something and rescind this stuff... It has ruined it. I'm a direct progeny, I don't know what you call it, but in the timber industry, finally giving up logging. And that was a few years ago, but...
Yeah, we've seen it across the board where we've lost so many sawmills across Montana. Tom, thanks for the call. Back to Nick Smith here. Nick, you look, I still have my note card in front of me of my conversation with Forest Service, with the head of the Forest Service, Tom Schultz, who was here in Montana at the Western Congressional Caucus. I scribbled notes as he was speaking, and then I was able to interview him as well. But, you know, to Tom's point, $250 million is what it costs to get a new sawmill up and running. So you need some certainty there.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, great comment by the caller. You know, at the end of the day, what, you know, the timber industry needs, you know, really is that certainty that, you know, if they're going to invest all of this money, you know, into a sawmill and then, of course, you know, hire people at family wages and keep them on the job, you know, they need to know that there is a raw material that's going to be there over time. You know, like any manufacturing sector, you know, sawmills need access, reliable access to a raw material. And in this case, that's wood. So the timber industry is facing challenges. You know, meanwhile, we have, you know, millions of acres in Montana that are at high risk of severe wildfire, insects, and disease. and need some level of treatment. But, you know, I have to say, you know, like the caller, I have a lot of hope. You know, I had Amanda Castor, the director of Montana DNRC, on my podcast yesterday.
She's great.
And, yeah. You know, she is working on this shared stewardship agreement with U.S. Forest Service for the DNRC to help manage hundreds of thousands of acres of forests that need treatment in northwestern Montana. And hopefully that is successful and you know, that is a model that the state agency can take elsewhere. But, you know, there's a lot of good things happening.
I was just going to mention that one. Optimism. Yeah, I was going to mention that one because that 20-year agreement, that's a 20-year agreement. That's the type of long-term commitment that these folks need to see to make these types of investments. That agreement signed with the U.S. Forest Service and Governor Gianforte. And then typically with the state taking the lead on a cooperative agreement like that, it can pull it out of federal court. So that's another way to kind of avoid that litigation side of the house. Hopefully, knock on wood with this one as well. Let's see. Another caller on the phone lines. Let's go to Dan in Missoula. Dan, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
On KGVO on 1290, it was brought up at the World Economic Forum, 30% of the federal forests in the United States will be put into a conservancy. And in 2050, 50% will be put in that conservancy, and it will not be accessed by walking, riding, doing anything with it. Has he heard of anything like that? It was put in during the Biden administration.
I wonder if that's a – thanks for the call, Dan. Let's see, Nick Smith, I wonder if that's in reference to the Biden public lands rule that has now been overturned by the Trump administration, where they were going to make non-use a use for multiple use lands, right?
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of it. And I think what the caller is referring to, I believe, is this kind of 30 by 30 concept that, you know, we're going to, you know, set aside, you know, 30% of our entire land base for preservation for forever. And that is a policy that was put in place by the Biden administration. Of course, we've got someone in the White House right now who is not, you know, fond of that idea. But, you know, I think, you know, that also speaks to the roadless rule and, you know, the imposition of this policy in the last hour of Bill Clinton's presidency. And what rescinding the roadless rule really is all about is kind of giving more local control to, you know, these public land managers who, you know, don't work in Washington, D.C.
That's right. A local voice. Hold that thought. Another quick break.
This is where Montana talks ag. With Lane Nordlund.
During the month of August, the 24 major milk-producing U.S. states produced over 18 billion pounds, up 3.3% from 2024. Production per cow in these regions averaged 2,068 pounds for August, 28 pounds above last year. The number of milk cows in these regions was just over 9.08 million head, 172,000 more than last year, and 7,000 head above July 2025. U.S. egg production also totaled 8.9 billion eggs in August, 2% below 2024. Production included over 7.6 billion table eggs and 1.3 billion hatching eggs. As we look to cattle prices compared to last week, steers and heifers sold $5 to $10 lower. I haven't said that in a while. Going through the ring, they were about $5 to $10 lower as demand was moderate to good and moderate supply was seen. Buyers built loads as smaller packages are finding their way to the marketplace and taking a few pennies off per pound for those smaller lots. Across the north central region, including Montana, 600 to 700-pound steers this week were priced at $3.99 a pound, down from $4.10 the previous week. 7 to 8 weights priced at $3.76 a pound. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
By the way, I've got a press release in front of me that just came out yesterday from the Montana Farm Bureau Federation. Farm Bureau supports repealing the roadless rule. All right, we got more callers on the phone lines. Thankfully, our guest is able to stick around with us for a few more minutes. And actually, frankly, you know, I said at the top of the show that for the second half of the program, we'd move into open phones if you got something else you want to talk about. But also, as I suspected, I think this topic will likely consume most of, if not the entire hour, especially with so many great callers on the phone lines here. So thankfully, Nick Smith is able to stick around with us as long as it takes here for the hour. Nick, yeah, we got cut off by the break there, but you were talking about the importance of not folks back in Washington, D.C. making these decisions, but folks on the ground who actually get it, who are there, who see it firsthand.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, if you support, you know, giving communities, giving local public land managers, you know, sort of greater flexibility and more say in how public lands are managed, then, you know, rescinding the roadless rule is a good policy. And, you know, what rescinding the roadless rule does is that it gives land managers the ability to make science-based, site-specific decisions, like thinning over stock stands in areas where, you know, maybe they couldn't before.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, let's sneak on another caller here. Let's see, we've got, is it Steve and Cody? I think Steve and Cody is with us on the phone line. Steve, did you have a Cody, Wyoming? Did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, Nick, Aaron, I have a question. We were talking about roadless areas and timber on the national forest. What effect will this have on national parks, like, for instance, the bear management areas within the parks, which are basically no trespassing areas, but 25% of Yellowstone is closed off to the public for that reason. And will it be rescinded with those transgressions, shall we say, the bureaucrats in the national parks?
All right. Thanks for the question. Nick, your thoughts, as I understand it, this is just Forest Service lands, or you know, more Forest Service lands, right? Not national park, but I may be wrong. Your thoughts?
That's right. Yeah, this has no impact on national parks, you know, lands managed by the National Park System lands. The roadless rule applies to National Forest System lands, which I think a lot of, you know, listeners understand are quite different from national parks. You know, national forests are set up to be used for multiple uses, you know, whether it's timber, whether it's recreation, hunting, you know, many grazing, many other different types of uses. But no, the roadless rule rescission does not apply to national parks.
By the way, speaking of grizzly bears in national parks, the Cowboy State Daily website, I shared this story on X about an hour ago. Incredible display of strength. Grizzly pulls elk from Yellowstone mud hole. This big bull elk was stuck in a mud hole, and this grizzly just grabbed its backside with its jaws and dragged this massive elk right out of a mud hole. And then I saw a friend of mine down near Gardner said, one time on their ranch, they had a dead cow they buried 6 feet under. A grizzly came in, dug it up, and dragged it out. And so, my goodness, those things, that's just crazy when you think about it. Farm Bureau supports repealing the roadless rule. The Montana Farm Bureau has submitted a letter supporting the U.S. Department of Agriculture / U.S. Forest Service proposal to repeal the 2021 roadless rule. They basically say that it's been very clear that this rule on nearly 45 million acres in Montana and other parts of the West has had a negative effect contrary to the Forest Service's mission. That was Montana Farm Bureau President Cindy Johnson, who added, quote, unilaterally prohibiting road building has made it more difficult to both suppress and reduce fire risk and to manage the tremendous natural resources that these forests contain. So, I think, Nick, it's just it's clear why the timber industry supports this. It's clear why sportsmen would support this for more access, but agriculture also in support of this rescission.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that a lot of Americans don't understand is that they are losing access to public lands. I think in any given year, the Forest Service closes, decommissions, obliterates 1,100 miles of forest roads every year. And so, you know, losing, you know, once you lose that access, it's hard to get it back, especially when you have policies like the roadless rule. But, you know, when you lose access, you know, not only are you losing that access for recreation, but I think critically, you know, firefighters are losing that safe access to be able to get to wildfires safely and put them out before they can harm our forests and communities. And so, and of course, access is important for managing forests.
All right. Next up on the phone lines, we've got Nick in Butte listening to KXTL. Nick, thanks for the call. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm just wondering if Nick considers Taxpayers for Common Sense as a radical group, because they were one of the biggest advocates for the roadless rule when it was implemented back in 2000.
Taxpayers for Common Sense. All right. Great question. Thanks for the call. Nick Smith, your thoughts.
I will have to check them out. I can't say I'm immediately familiar with that group.
Yeah, it always seems like you get all these groups with these nice sounding names, and then once you start to do a little digging on who's funding these groups and who's behind some of these groups, it's like, oh, okay, the group with the nice sounding name, you know, but you never know. Yeah, I'm with you. We'll have to go back and look at that organization in particular. So if the argument is, well, you know, I don't want the government spending money building these roads. Actually, most of these roads were built by industry. In fact, actually, that kind of leads into something. So I've had the honor, Nick, of going to the Mackers Convention in Great Falls for a couple years now, which is the Montana Association of County Road Supervisors. And a lot of county commissioners are there. These county commissioners are getting hammered because their constituents are saying, hey, when are you going to repave my road? Or, hey, you know, and the point being, what these county commissioners and these road supervisors were telling me is now they're looking at taking what used to be paved roads and basically making them gravel roads just to keep the road in operation. But the point they made is that because we destroyed our timber industry, it destroyed the funding base for these county roads. And oftentimes, it was the timber industry that also built a lot of these roads. So you kill the timber industry, you've killed your county roads.
You're absolutely right in that. I would say by far the majority of forest roads on our national forests were built by the timber industry, you know, likely 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, to those who, you know, might criticize rescinding the roadless rule over you know, taxpayer funding. You know, I mean, rescinding the roadless rule doesn't mandate any new logging or new roads, for that matter. What it does is it gives public land managers the ability to do some forest management in some roadless areas where it makes sense, where it's appropriate, and especially in areas where it can make a difference in terms of protecting communities from wildfire. So, you know, if you want to talk about insane fiscal policy, you know, well, then let's continue, you know, the 50 years of non-management. Let's continue to put all of these resources into wildfire suppression, which, you know, is important, but also very expensive. We could save a lot more money by actively, proactively managing these lands. And, you know, that would include, you know, putting in a road, you know, where appropriate to do that management.
All right, about 1 minute to go before our next and final break of the hour. Let's sneak on Kevin in. Let's see, Kevin in Kalispell. Kevin, thanks for the call. Did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, Aaron, thanks for having me on. Say, as a response for the roadless rule, we definitely have to open that up. So for fire prevention and long-term access for wood for our existing mills. But also we have to be looking at because of the demise of these mills continuing, we need to look at creating markets for the massive amount of biomass that is going to be generated off of these forest health projects and just the average logging. We currently have no large scale biomass using operation in the state. The last one we had was our pulp mill in Missoula, and that's long gone.
I think you were the guy who brought that up when I had the governor on the show, and the governor said no, he is spot on talking about biomass. All right, hold that thought. Quick break.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Cole in Deer Lodge just sent us a message on the Montana Talks app. The same people complaining about affordable housing are the same people that praise our liberal judges every time they halt a timber sale. Here in Deer Lodge, where we have, you know, the largest sawmill in the state, the uncertainty of our lumber economy has our entire town pumping the brakes for the first time in over 20 years. We have the potential to do something to support our natural resource economy. If we don't rescind the roadless rule, the small towns in Montana that have been barely hanging on are going to shrivel up and be absorbed into the ever-expanding playground for the wealthy. And then there's more where that came from Cole in Deer Lodge. Cole, thanks for that message. Sorry, we're a little short on time. I'll get reaction from Nick Smith here in a second, but let's sneak in another caller. Another Chris in Columbia Falls. Chris, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks.
Yeah, this is the original Chris.
Yeah. I wondered if that was you earlier.
Can't tweak this thing. You have to gut it. And the only way you can gut it is for everybody to be on the same page and understand where all of this came from. Sustainable Development, Agenda 21, Joan Villon. She entered the den of iniquity back then. And this was back in 94 when Agenda 21 was formulated by the United Nations under Maurice Strong. And you need to go online, see if you can find this 8-page, and it will clearly show you how Prince Charles and Al Gore and all those people were involved in doing this to us.
Well, you know, your comments about the UN, very timely, especially considering President Trump's remarks at the UN General Assembly yesterday, where he called them out and pointed out how they have been undermining the United States of America, how they have been undermining the broader Western world. Let's see, Nick Smith, your thoughts from a natural resource industry standpoint. I think you could say the same thing that President Trump said about the UN yesterday on the natural resource standpoint as well, right?
Well, you know, I mean, there's an ongoing effort for people far away, whether, you know, they're in Washington, D.C. or elsewhere, to impose, you know, limitations to how local land, you know, can be used by local communities. And I guess the only thing that I would add is that, you know, when public lands are managed by local public land managers with input from Montanans and communities, good things can happen. And that is why I'm, you know, really excited about the work that the Montana DNRC is doing with, you know, things like Good Neighbor Authority and doing more management that, you know, results in many kinds of benefits for Montana community.
That's right. Yeah, well said. Well, I want to get some final thoughts from you here or cover any ground that we might have missed, Nick, but I did promise our listeners I would play one soundbite here. There were so many soundbites we could have played, but I knew this topic would be a big one here because it's so important to our state. But, you know, we talk about losing access, losing land, to the radical environmentalists, what about the communist Chinese? Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins was on Fox News talking about the communist Chinese and stopping the loss of American farmland to the communist Chinese. Oh, let me try to play this again one more time. Here we go.
300,000 acres of China-owned farmland. I mean, it isn't just a small amount. Here's what the president's vision on America First includes. It includes the American dream available to everyone, lower taxes, less government, more freedom. But also, and we've been talking about this now, and I love that you're focused on this with me, it really is an uncompromised food supply as well. And so we've got to open the market back up to our small and mid-sized farmers and ranchers.
How do you do that if you're being pushed out by all these big agri companies and China elbows out everybody?
Well, we begin to focus on it now. We ensure that those buying farmland through the CFIUS process, which is a federal
foreign investment. Yeah.
That's right. We ensure, which they took their eye off.
How is that even? I mean, again, I keep saying this. They own these companies now. How do we get them back?
We'll hold it right there. That was obviously a segment with Laura Ingraham last night. Go to x.com/Aaron Flint. You can see that whole clip there. But only about a minute now to go. Nick Smith, again, great to have you join us. Thanks for sticking with us even longer than we initially scheduled with you, because we got so many great phone calls and we still didn't get to everybody. What else do you want to share with folks all across Montana before we run out of time?
Well, people can check out Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities on Facebook and Instagram. Visit our website, healthyforest.org. A lot of good information there about active forest management and how citizens can get involved.
All right. Well, great to have you on the show. Let's see. Yeah, I don't think we have time to sneak. I was going to try to sneak on one more caller. I was actually joking with Nick during the break. I was like, I try to use every single second. We always try to talk right up to the break. And so I was going to try to see if we could sneak on one more caller, but I don't think we could make it all happen in time. But hey, we'll be taking more phone calls tomorrow on this show. One topic we're going to get to tomorrow, I don't think it'll take the full hour tomorrow, but we're certainly going to cover it, is the National School Report Card is out, and the grades are not good. We're going to be talking about that with a Montana-specific angle tomorrow on the show. Plus, I caught up with a top official for Education Secretary Linda McMahon, who was just in Montana. We'll share some of those highlights in that conversation as well. That's coming up tomorrow.